We welcome you to the Tape Ministry of Denton Bible Church. The speaker today is the senior pastor, Tom Nelson.
This week, how do you date? Does the Bible have anything to say about dating?
It sure does.
How many single people do we have? Raise your hand. Oh, dear. Well, we've got some things for you this morning. How do you date? And how do you romance your wives? I don't want to see any of you men going down the text checking it off. Doing great there, doing great there. We're going to deal with the male of the species this morning. No body checking, no elbows. Let's see how to date. You ready? If you are not a vulnerable man, if you are a guy sitting out there with hide on you, we're going to get all on you. We're going to run a combine over you this morning in the Song of Solomon. Here's the way you date. Verse 8. Listen, chapter 2, verse 8. My beloved, behold, he's coming, climbing on the mountains, leaping on the hills. My beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag. We would call that just a stud. All right, that's what she calls him. He's just a stud. Behold, he's standing behind the wall, looking through the windows, peering through the lattice. He's getting closer to the house. My beloved responded and said to me, arise, my darling, my beautiful one. Come along. The winter is past. The rain is over and gone. Flowers have appeared in the land. Time has arrived for pruning the vines. The voice of the turtle dove has been heard in our land. The fig tree has ripened. Vines and blossom have given forth fragrance. Let me ask you, this is the period of the year. What period is this that he sees as his love? Spring. Because that's what love is. It is, remember, can you still remember? It is springtime. It is life. It's exciting. And he goes to get this woman and he is just so pumped up. He's in his 57 chariot. And he's getting over there as fast as he can. He slides up. You know, when I was at North Texas, we always could tell when Friday night came because we had these two Sigma Nus that live right down the hall from me. Two athletes, both Sigma Nus. And on Friday night at about 6 o'clock, they would head off for their dates. And they would take their stereos and turn it up as loud as they could. And they would put on the William Tell Overture. And you would hear the Lone Ranger thundering throughout the dorm. Because that's how they felt in going to get these girls. They were so excited. I can remember living in Kerr Hall, and from Kerr Hall you can see Maple and Clark, the two women's dorms back when I was in school anyway. And you'd look out the windows, and they would shut down the women's dorms at 10. And so there would be a lot of guys going over to get that last hug and that last kiss from their girlfriends, and you literally could see these guys in a dead sprint at about 9:50. Just to get this thing. And when I read Song of Solomon the first time, I thought about the William Tell Overture. I thought about these guys on a dead sprint over to Maple Street Hall. That's the way it is. And you know what's sad about this text? We read this text and we laugh. The text is not to be laughed at, gentlemen. It is put there to be emulated. This is the Bible. Romance. We tend to see these couples eating out and we look at them as how they kind of moon at each other and look at each other and we think, they'll learn. They'll learn. They'll get tired, bored with each other, flat, stereotyped, and then they'll be like us. And that is not the way you are supposed to do marriage. Romance here is not meant to be laughed at or to be departed from. It is meant to be imitated and mimicked. You know, I'm a poetry lover. I happen to love poetry, and I love to read it around my family. The only problem is my two boys, Ben and John, do not share my love of poetry. All right, and so I go to read it, and they kind of go, ah, here he comes again. And I say to them, I say, hey, listen up. I say, fellas, it's good for you to be in school and to learn the static sciences, to learn history data and science data and chemistry data and pronouns and verbs and gerunds and participles, and that's good to learn the data. But if you can't learn data along with Keats, Byron, Shelley, Longfellow, Whittier, life loses its soul. See? And that's the way that romance is. When a guy gets married, see, he's romantic, but he loses it. And then guys get caught up in their duty and their responsibility. They have got to make that check. They have got to do the weed eating, and they've got to do the mechanical work and provide that check. And the woman has a duty and a responsibility to that home. And pretty soon you don't get lovers. They lose their creativity under responsibility and duties. And you have a maid and a gardener sharing a bedroom and a bath. And that is not exciting. Because marriage will kill romance. It is possible to be dutiful and responsible and still be creative and spontaneous and exciting. It's just that you don't do it instinctively anymore. You work at it. Do you know that at Dallas Theological Seminary, the greatest problem they have in preaching classes is that the preachers there, these young guys, come up to be preachers. And when a young guy, now dig this, men, when a kid is little, he is creative. A little boy loves Legos and Lincoln Logs and crayons and sand piles and makes sand piles and army forts because he's creative. And then he becomes a man and he graduates creativity. And he goes from crayons to rulers and T-squares and compasses and protractors. And we responsibilityize the guy and we take little boys and breed creativity out of them. And when Howard Hendricks gets these guys in preaching classes at Dallas Seminary, he says they are all good at coordinating verbs, context, syntax, theology, and systems, but they are terrible as preachers. And they end up graduating Dallas, and they are marvelous at the skill of embalming an audience. They can embalm hundreds with syntax, context, grammar, and all of that stuff. But they have lost the ability to be what God is. God is a romantic individual. This book is a love song. And they have lost the ability to get into that text and to feel like Peter, John, James felt. They have lost the ability to look at a crowd and to think how that bank teller out there feels and how that teacher feels and that housewife feels and to get into their souls. And so Hendricks makes them teach in a homiletics class, Acts chapter 3, the lame man's being healed. And you know what they have to do? He won't let them. And you ought to see a Dallas Seminary guy. Dallas Seminary wardrobe. Their uniform is a blue sport coat, gray slacks, wire rim glasses, because all of these Poindexters are blind by the time they get there because they've read so much. They got a little gray in their hair, and they are all very, very rigid kind of guys like this. And he takes them and he makes them teach Acts chapter 3, but you can't teach it. You've got to communicate it in a creative way. You can do a puppet show on it. You can do a... What else do you do? Charlie, you do a rap. You can do a rap. You can do a skit. You ever seen a 40-year-old guy weighs 220 pounds do a creative dance? And he makes them get stupid to break the parameters because young boys lose the ability of being creative, and that's why they become lousy husbands. Very responsible, but lousy lovers. Well, this guy is still romantic. And we're going to check him in 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And they're going to be dating when they marry. Watch this. Verse 14. This guy takes his wife out, and in verse 14 he says, "Oh, my dove in the clefts of the rock in the secret place of the steep pathway, let me see your form, let me hear your voice. Your voice is sweet, your form is lovely." You go in from dating to depth. And he's saying to this girl, this vulnerable, tender girl, "Come out and let me see you. Communicate with me. I want inside of you." He does to her like Jesus Christ does to us. "I want to know you." I don't know if you couples realize it, but this is where you fell in love. You know that? You guys think that your wife just took one look at your beautiful face and just said, "I've got to have you." And I got news, that ain't what she felt. You spent time with her and you got into her and she got into you and you touched her deeply. This is the way you fall in love. I fell in love with my wife. If you go down University Drive, there's an apartment complex over on the right off of Greenway or whatever it is up there. That's where I'd courted her at, and I'd go into that apartment, we'd sit and drink hot chocolate, and I did something to that woman I had never done. I told her how I felt. Level one communication is cliche. Level two is the sharing of information. Level three is feelings. And I told her how I felt, and I told her what I was scared about, and I told her what frightened me. And you know what? She didn't laugh at me or mock me. She sympathized and reflected me, and she was tender. And she told me what she dreamed about and what she hurt and what she cried about. And you know what? I listened to her. And I reached inside of her and I touched her. And we fell in love. And we thought, we've got to do this for 6 years. You know what my biggest problem is in marriage? I quit doing it. my biggest struggle in marriage is I went from being someone that communicated with my wife, someone that was close to my wife, and I got married and got to be someone who was close by my wife. Big difference, isn't there, ladies? Between a husband who is close by you and a close husband who is close to you. And I'll tell you guys what happens to us. That we get to where we wake up in the morning with that woman, and there she is in the bed. We share the bathroom with her, the closet with her, the breakfast table with her, the kitchen with her. We share the car with her, the mailbox with her, and we think that we're close, and we are not close. Because we don't communicate anymore. The reason that we had such good dating relationships and it was so exciting that it was springtime is because I picked her up at 6 and I said, I'm going to bring you home at midnight and it's me and you. And we're going to talk and get deep. And I'm going to listen to you and I'm going to get up into you. And that's sweet. And we quit doing that. And a husband spends his time at the job and he comes home and vegetates. And his wife tries to get up close to him. You know what, guys, is the biggest complaint that I hear when women come in for counseling? It's not that their husband is irresponsible, not that he is a bad lover. It's that he will, quote, he no longer will share himself. She says, when I say to him, how did your job go? I want to know that. Guys, you were created, Corinthians says, for the glory of God. The woman, quote, for the glory of man. Eve was created for Adam. When you will not share yourself with your dove and have her come out, it is like your Bible now takes on blank pages and God will no longer talk to you. You have got to share. When she says, how does your job go? She means, how does your job go? And she wants to get down deep inside of you. Tell you what I do with my wife. I still try to date her. We had a date a few weeks ago, went out to the clay pot, got a corner booth. And I put her in the corner to look at this wall, and I looked at this wall. And all I wanted to see was just her. And I just talk to her, and I get down into her. I still go get soft ice cream cone. We just head off to a Dairy Queen. Get in the car, and we head off. And we'll go someplace, get an ice cream cone, and we'll just talk. And you know what I found? In my marriage, I happen to be the initiator. What I do is questions. And I have found that this woman is still as exciting as when she was 23 and I met her. She's still that exciting. I ask her questions. I get down and she's really fun. I'm driving around last week and I said, you're in high school 66 to 68, right? Right. What was your favorite group? I don't know. Come on. What was your favorite group? Chicago. What was your favorite song? Oh, I don't know. Sure you do. How'd it go? Well, kind of like this. I said, hey, I like that song too. And we get to talking, laughing about that. And I said, did you dance? She said, I was Baptist. You know I didn't dance. I said, don't give me that. I know Baptist. You did too dance. Did you go to parties after the game? Oh, yeah. Did you dance? Come on. Yeah, you did. I knew it. And I said to her, how'd you dance? She said, what do you mean, how'd I dance? Yeah, how'd you dance? I mean, you dance the boogaloo, the twist, the frug, remember all the stuff in the 60s? How did you dance? Oh, I can't remember. Well, show me. Come on. And I'm driving down the road. Come on, show me. And she's doing this, all this stuff, you know. And I got her dancing in the seat over here. I said, you were a cheerleader. And I knew she was a cheerleader. What was your favorite cheer? I don't remember. Sure, you remember. What, 2 bits, 4 bits? What was it? How'd you do it? I always spelled out Wildcat. Well, how'd you do it? Show me how you spelled out Wildcat. And we get to having more fun. I sit at the breakfast table. Is she in this service? Good. I'll tell you what I said. Now, we tape this service, though, don't we? I'll tell you what I did. She's in college. All right, I'm about 68 on. And I say to her, 68, do you have any bell bottoms? We're at the breakfast table, all right? Oh, yeah, I think I did. Do you have any hip huggers? Oh, I don't know. Yeah, yeah, I do. Come on. Did you have any hip? Yeah, I guess I did. Do you have any hot pants? Y'all remember those? Some of you ain't got a clue. All right. Some of you are going, yeah, I remember those. She says, Tommy. I said, come on now, did you? Well, I don't know. Maybe I did. Oh, don't give me that. Yeah, I had a pair. What color? I don't know. Yeah, you do. What color did you tell your daddy? No, I didn't tell my daddy. And we have more fun sitting at a breakfast table, driving in a car. And you know what? I thought, guys, I knew my wife. And you think you know your wife. You don't know your wife. You don't know your wife and she doesn't know you. And what's fun, as I find that this woman is just as fun and as scintillating if I'll spend time and dig down inside her. You go from dating to depth. You guys still date your wives? You still spend time with your wives? I don't mean going through the drive-thru. I mean going to a place and talking. I don't mean taking them to the Ranger game, all right? I mean going to a place and digging down there. Listen, one of the worst things about our culture is television, radios, stereos. Because it teaches you to listen, teaches you to look, but it doesn't teach you to talk. And that's why we turn out these vegetables, these emotional spuds in marriage. Can't talk anymore. Just kind of look, boop, boop, turn the channel. Spuds that can't talk. Verse 15, what happens when your dating goes to depth? You have, verse 15, danger. Because you married flawed material. You married damaged goods, sinners. And verse 15, catch the little foxes for us, the little foxes that are ruining the vineyards while they are in blossom. The springtime of their love is going to get cut short. You know why? Little foxes in the vineyards. You know what foxes do in vineyards? You get a little flower and it forms a flower that forms a bud and it breaks off and then you get a grape. If you get a fox in the vineyard, they eat those little sweet buds before they turn into ripe grapes. You ever get foxes in your vineyard that does not allow your love to ripen? There's a lot of you out there that your love has never ripened because you got foxes in your vineyards, and like this couple, you did not have an us and an our mentality of a commitment to your marriage. I remember taking Teresa out on a date. In our relationship, she happens to be the one who is great with directions. You can put her any place. She knows northeast, south, and west. You give her something to put together, some bicycle. She doesn't read the directions. She just throws it out and puts it together. She's very mechanical. She has a great sense of where she is. Not me. So we're driving on one of our early dates, and I was away in Dallas, and I'm trying to get back to the house. See, and I see this water tower, and I said, it must be Louisville. And I head for it. And it's not Louisville. And I say, it's okay, baby, I know where we are. And I get out and go into a 7-Eleven. I say, hey, Mac, where am I? He said, well, that's Texas Stadium right over there. You're in Irving. Okay. So I get back and say, we're in Irving. And I'm looking at Teresa and I see this little tight smile. And she wears it all the way home. And I found out that there was a fox in our vineyard. See, we were different. And she happened to get kind of impatient with me, because I do klutzy kind of things. And she began to find out I'm very disciplined. I'm disciplined off the chart. My wife is very spontaneous. She's up at the crack of noon. because she about 11 o'clock, my wife gets to perking at about 11. Because you get the kids to bed at that time, and boy, you get to perking. Man, I fall out. I'm never going past 5:30. 5:30, I sit up like this. I'm ready to go. She's laying there. And as a result, I can be very inflexible. And I didn't realize that. See, when you're a single, you've got problems. But you don't know you've got problems. It's like one hand clapping. Until you get married. And then all of a sudden you find out, I am inflexible. And I am impatient. And I want things my way. And I am uncontrolling. And you didn't realize you didn't like to reconcile problems. That you would walk off and close the door. And you can't do that. And you never knew that until you got married. You never knew until you got married you had to have things your way. You never knew you were controlling and selfish. And you never knew that you couldn't buffet your body and make it your slave. And you get a couple that has an inordinate passion for each other and they can't deal with a sexual relationship. And they get a fox in their vineyard. You find out a guy that has a sharp, quick tongue, an abrasive tongue. And he never knew that until he got in a marriage. There's foxes out there, aren't there? And that's what happens. Do you know what you have to do? You have to do it like this. Catch the foxes for us that are ruining our vineyards. You know what most couples come to my study for counseling say? They say, he's got a fox in his vineyard. She's got a problem in the vineyard. The biggest problem in counseling is when you see a couple pull up at your study and the woman gets out. In all of my years of marital counseling, I have been called by one man. One man. to deal with problems. It's always the woman. Because the guy thinks a good marriage is duty. The woman does not want duty. She wants that husband. And they start having problems. And she gets out of the car carrying her Bible, two Dobson books, and Tim LaHaye. Okay? Walking up to the door, dragging this drone behind her, who is not going to communicate, and they sit down, and what it ends up is, change my wife. Oh yeah? Well, you change my husband. And they want me to work on the other one. Now, I'm a nice guy, and I'll tend to work with them. You go to Tom Purvis in our church, who is our counseling director. Tom is a good counselor because he's nasty. Good counselors don't need to be sensitive. A good counselor is nasty. And what Tom will do, he'll say, whoa, stop right there. Y'all go home. Until you have a commitment together to where your marriage is more important than your selfish interest, I'm not going to work with you. You are going to have conflicts in your marriage just like I do. Do you know how you deal with them? When the couple says, I'm not important, we're important. And whenever my wife and I have a conflict and we just hold our hand and say, baby, I'm wrong. If you win an argument, you lose a mate. You never win arguments in marriage. You share your heart, and you love, and you speak with tenderness and kindness, and you reconcile. And that's the way this husband is. Guys, let me tell you, when I see the greatest panic in a woman's eyes, when she comes in by herself to my study and tells about a problem she's having in her marriage, and she says, and my husband tells me that I'm dumb for feeling that way, fellas, if a wife tells you she feels a certain pain, she's right. Don't you give her logic as to why she shouldn't feel that way. She is right. And you've got to deal with her at the emotional level. But he'll say that she's dumb. He'll say, don't bother me. One woman said he just sits and watches the TV and won't talk. And now that woman is estranged from her husband. That's why. You remember why we got married? Can you remember? Bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh, mine. The two shall become what? One flesh. The man was alone. God said, it's not good to be alone. I'll make a help suit for him. That's marriage. Help, companionship, intimacy. It says that a prostitute forsakes the companion of her youth. It says that a man who leaves his wife in Malachi 3 deserts the companion of his youth and his wife by covenant. Kom panos, with bread. Someone you eat with, you're close with. That's why we got married. She didn't marry you guys because you're a good kisser. She didn't marry you because of the wealth you promised her. She married you because at some part you opened up and she touched you and she fell in love with intimacy. And when that woman or that man feels like, I can't get inside my mate, that is the loneliest, loneliest, lonely there is in the world. Do you know that's why at the month of December and April you have the most suicides? Because it's Christmas and springtime and everybody's happy. And when everybody's happy and you're lonely, you die. There's no greater loneliness than the loneliness of a home. And so this woman looks at me with a panic in her eyes. And it's not because she has married an imperfect man. She has been married an imperfectible mate who will not change, who will not listen. Boy, when's the last time that you as a couple just got away and got with each other and just loved each other and talked deeply and began the habit of sitting at a breakfast table? You know what I love the deepest, most tenderest time with my wife? It's whenever I can sit with her at a breakfast table, sit around the table with her, and I got a cup of coffee, and she's got a cup of coffee. And I can just reach across the table, and where you just kind of, you ever do that where you just lightly touch? You're not holding each other. You're just lightly touching. And we're just sharing what we feel. Or whenever she'll come into my study, and, you know, it's kind of funny because I work out of my home. And so she has full right to interrupt me whenever I want to. And it's tough because I go from being a preacher to a husband a lot. As soon as she walks in the door, I have to change. And when she walks in the door, and sometimes Teresa will come and just sit right there. You know what I used to do like a dummy? I used to be so committed to memorizing Scripture, and I still am. You know what I'd do? I'd go out for a drive with my wife, and I would put my Bible on the dashboard. And I would drive and memorize Scripture. And she's talking, and I'm going, that got real old. My wife communicated with me very clearly that she did not like it. As a matter of fact, she communicated it so clearly you could hear her on Mingo over here. We live on Tulane. She communicated very clearly. She didn't like that. And I said, oh, we got a fox. We got to stop that. And I shut it down. So she comes and I talk to her and we spend time. Some of you guys, boy, you're great weed eaters. You're great mechanics. Great providers. You got to let that woman inside of you. That's why she married you. I'm not romantic. You used to be. You used to like Lincoln logs and Legos. You used to like sandboxes. You can be romantic. Who are the romantic guys of our culture? It's not women. Guys, we are the romantics. Da Vinci, Michelangelo, Walt Disney, Mickey Mouse. It's the males. Men make the great chefs. It takes creativity. Men make the painters. Men make the directors. We're creative. It's just we have it bred out of us by our education and our society. And we are taught that a good husband is a cyborg who makes money and goes to his job and says to his wife, I'll be back. All right. Those kind of guys make for great pensions, but they make lousy lovers. And it's just been bred out of you. Now watch this. Whenever you have that kind of intimacy with your wife, watch how she feels. Verse 16, she feels added security. I'm my beloved's and he is mine. When do you feel the closest to your mate to know that my mate loves me? It's whenever a wife can talk about stupid things that she has done. And then she can say, but you know what? My husband still loves me just as much. And I'm so secure. Why? Because I'm so dumb. And he still loves me. It's when that guy can say, I know my wife loves me. Oh, listen, I know my wife loves me so much. There's no woman who could have lived with me. And she was so tender. I know she's committed to me. When do we feel the closest to Christ? Whenever we've sinned. That's a good thing about conflicts. It brings you close if you do it right. You not only get added security, he says you get a deeper respect. She said he pastures his flock among the lilies. She sees him like a shepherd king. And that's why she just says he's a shepherd among the lilies. He's so kind and he's so gentle. That's when I feel the closest to my wife. I tell you what, it's whenever I tell stories about how we have conflicted. And then I see her. I tell you the way we get sometimes. Whenever my wife and I have a conflict, whenever we run head to head, it will a lot of times bring an initial separation. God let us go through one of these deals on Monday because I had to teach it on Sunday. And He always does this to me. So on Monday, we had a conflict over child rearing. Okay? She wants the discipline. I like to use the Foreign Legion. I say, send them to France. So that. We had a conflict. I said something. You know how it is, guys? When you say something, and as soon as you say it, you want it back. And it goes, boom, boom. And there it went. You know, conflicts are like trimming your nails. You know, it's good to keep your nails trimmed, but if you get down there to the quick, boy, you can hurt. If you say it wrong, if you say it loud, if you say it in the wrong way. And I said it in the wrong way, and I hurt her. And I said, darling, that was sin. I shouldn't have said that. Would you forgive me? All right. So, even though we had reconciled, there was that tension. You know how it is. Even though you're reconciled, you can have an intimacy gap. And I guess we went through about an hour and a half. And then it was funny. This always so often happens. I'm walking in the kitchen, coming back through the kitchen, and here she is. She's walking. And I just saw her there, and it was like a magnet. She just came. Yeah. You ever heard that statement about fighting is fun because making up is great? That's biblical. It's biblical. That's the good thing about conflicts, is it brings a deeper love. And whenever I tell stories about fighting stories like every couple has, that's when I feel the most intimate toward Teresa. Because I know that I have security and respect because we've hurt each other. Watch this, though. Verse 17. I love this. There's something else you feel. She says, a new line here, a new statement, until the cool of the day when the shadows flee away, that's morning time, when it's cool and the darkness is gone, sun comes up, okay? She says, until morning, turn, my beloved, and be like a gazelle or a young stag on the mountains of Bether. If you look in the geography of Israel, you will not find anything called the mountains of Bether. It's only mentioned one time in the Bible. It's because there's no place called the mountain of Bether. You know what the mountain of Bether is? Bethar in Hebrew means to cut. The mountains of Bethar are the mountains of separation. Now, what does this mean? She feels intimacy and love, and then she turns to her husband and says, young stud, come to the twin mountains all night long. What does that mean? You're thinking, that doesn't mean, oh yeah. That's just what it means. That's in the Bible. Yeah, that's in the Bible. This woman, it's talking about, and she's going to say the statement three times in the book. The husband's going to talk about turning and going to his hill of frankincense and his mountain of myrrh. The very last line of the book is going to become, be like a young stag on the mountains of spice. What does the book of Proverbs say a man should be intoxicated with? The breast of the wife of his youth. The mountains of separation are the breast of the woman, and she says, I want you. Now you're thinking, Tom, why don't you preach a series on that, brother? That's what you guys are thinking. That's a pretty good text right there. Incidentally, ladies, I mean, you've memorized, wives be subject to your husbands, husbands love your wives. You ever memorize this? This is mentioned just as many times as husbands love your wives. You want to be fundamental? I dare you. You know why this is a great book? Because it pictures sexual desire like God sees it. It is not a dirty thing. It is a wonderful thing, blessed thing, holy thing, joyous thing. But it has to have wisdom. Just like a fireplace can give warmth and light and joy. But if you don't put a steel grating by it, what happens? You'll burn down the thing you love the most, your home. That's what sex will do. Sexual relationship is put there by God. The switches are there by God. And it is wonderful. But if you don't have the grating of wisdom, man, it'll tear your life up. That's why I love to teach these books. People think that God really didn't create sex. He's not sure what it is and He doesn't like it. They used to tell girls in England, when they would have sex with their husbands, they would say, lay there and think of the queen. Because the thought was, the reason you're having sex is to have babies, so England will have a fighting force, and that's the only reason you're supposed to have it. That somehow sex is part of the curse. Nah, this woman just gives herself to this man. So you guys are thinking, that's pretty nice. How do you do this? I'll tell you how you do it. Number one, you take your wife out. Number two, you be tender with her. You be sensitive with her. You share your heart. You be forgiving. You have as big a commitment to your relationship as she does. And you know what? You're going to find out she has respect, security, and desire for you. The greatest sex organ in a woman is her mind. And when she meets a tender mate, she wants to give herself. I told you about the book the guy wrote. 38 years as an agnostic counselor. And he wrote a book on marriage counseling, and he entitled it, Passive Men, Wild Women. You know why he wrote the book? Because he found that the reason women are angry in their marriages is because of the passivity of their husbands. Because a job gets their time, energy, wisdom, creativity, humor, and wardrobe, but their house gets nothing. And she thinks, he made a vow to me. Why isn't he funny with me? Why isn't he spontaneous with me? Why isn't he creative with me and tender with me? And it makes women mad to be married to these drones, these worker bees, when they want to be married to a man. And sometimes it takes some wisdom how to do it. Now watch this, guys. 3:1. On my bed night after night, I sought him whom my soul loves. And I sought him, but I didn't find him. I must arise and go about in the city, into the street. This woman lies and she's thinking, I lay there night after night thinking about my husband-to-be. And it just drove me crazy. I heard this one woman say that she brought her husband home to meet her parents one time. He stayed in one bedroom, she stayed in the other, and she heard him snoring through the walls. And she said, I cried all night because I wanted him. That's love where you're turned on by the snoring of your mate. I heard another woman say, this dear saint, I went and spoke in Groover, Texas a couple of weeks ago, way out by Amarillo. They got some of the most wonderful people, and I shared this text about how this woman wanted her husband and longed for this husband. She told me about how she went to visit her husband-to-be when he was a freshman at Baylor and she was a senior in high school at Groover. She said, I went out to visit him and I spent time with him, and then me and his family drove back home, and she said, I cried from Waco to Dallas, and from Dallas I cried to Amarillo, and I cried from Amarillo past Fritch and Stinnett and Borger, and I cried all the way home. Is that biblical? Yeah. This woman says, I wanted this guy. And so she said in verse 2, I must arise and go about. Verse 2, I must seek him. Verse 3, the watchmen who make the rounds of the city found me. And I said, have you seen him? They said, verse 4, scarcely had I left them when I found him whom my soul loves. I held on to him, wouldn't let him go until I'd brought him into my mother's house in the room of her who conceived me. Guys, why is that text there? I asked the ultimate scholar on Song of Solomon, my wife. I said, why is that text there? And she said, it is showing you how a woman feels. She said, we are weaker vessels and we are insecure. And she said to me, that is why we women want you to tell us that you love us. Even though you do the weed eating, even though you're the mechanic, even though you bring home the bread, we need you to tell us that you love us. She said, we need you to hold us and to touch our hands. How many of you guys have wives that have said to you, I'd like you to tell me, why don't you tell me that you love me?
Ah, you know, baby, you know I love you.
And she does, but she still needs you to tell her that. Now, I don't need Charlie to tell me that. I know Charlie loves me. Charlie comes up and goes, Tom, get away. Charlie, I'm going to get him away like that. Because Charlie knows I love him, but that's the way men are. Men don't have to do that. But your wife does. Why? Because she's not a soft boy. She's a woman. Why does she need touch? Why does she just need you in a non-sexual way to reach out and hold her hand? Because she's a woman. Why does she need you to share your soul with her? Because she's a woman. Why does she need for you to spend time with her and take her out? Because she's a woman. Why does she want to give herself to you? And why does she want you? Because she's a woman. Verse 5. Guys, how do you respond to this? I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or the hinds of the field, don't arouse or awaken love until it pleases. You guys in this congregation that are single, your wife-to-be is going to have switches that are going to go off in her. You young single girls, you're going to have emotions of desire and passion. And everything in you is going to want to give yourself sexually to a man. And that is the most right, good, biblical, holy thing there is. But, guys, you don't hit that switch until it's time. Because if you do, you're going to build a dating relationship built on lighter fluid. And you can't run a marriage on it. You've got to build a dating relationship on the deep embers of respect, communication, and sensitivity. And that's going to go into marriage and flame into a beautiful thing. So you don't have to work on a sexual relationship by working on sex. You work on communication and tenderness and respect. What a great text. You know what happens? The first time she said this, it was when they were attracted, and God awarded her patience with the deepest relationship up till now. This time she says it, and God is going to award her in the next section with honeymoon. That's next week. You don't want to miss next week. Let's pray. Father in heaven, we look at this text and we thank you that you are the God of the heavens and the earth and the sea and the dry land, of Adam and Eve and of their union. And you gave me a book of 8 chapters. You gave me 16 chapters in Romans about how to be saved. And you have given me at least 8 on how to love my mate. And Father, you have given us men, and here are some insight, that our wives need time and they need vulnerability. They need a listening ear. They need tenderness. They need a man who is jointly committed to that marriage. A man they can respect. A man they can trust. And one who is worthy of her giving herself to him. Father, I pray for any of these young singles who have lit the stove too quick. For any of these young men who have not learned to say to a woman, "Not yet." I pray, Father, for a lot of our couples that maybe have grown up with the idea that those feelings are bad and wicked and have never learned that that is the fireplace of a union. I pray that this week these guys might spend some time with that lady and they might remember back in the years long ago when they held her in white and they held her face in their hands and they kissed her very gently. And they turned and they faced a multitude as Mr. and Mrs. I pray that you would rekindle that romance, that you would have very patient wives, very creative men, that will recognize why they got married in the first place. I pray that our early romances would not be sweet memories, but would be the early spark to what continues until the day of our death. And I thank you even more for a shepherd king who sought us, and we lay on our beds of sin and we thought that we could not go on until we found him. And he draws us out like little doves because he loves to see us and to hear us, to spend time with us, and for us to recognize that he is kind, that we are secure, and that we kindle a deep desire to give ourselves completely in fellowship with him. And for a husband or a wife here this morning who has never been converted, who has never taken the shepherd king, Jesus Christ, the ultimate Sulaiman, the ultimate man of rest and peace, and has never found their rest in him, that this morning they might invite his living presence into their life, as the Bible teaches, and be converted. Do so for Jesus' sake. Amen. We are dismissed.